Okay, Talise is with us here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell is here. We need to hear the rest of the story because, like so much of what you write a writer's
I'm sorry,
life,
I didn't sum it up, but enough.
We're talking about
Selma. And we're talking about how a reporter, or a historian, indeed.
Well, and as you were talking, the click that you saw in my eyes was, oh, this guy's a social historian. I get it.
Well, you get it. Oh, I'm glad because I don't always get it myself, but. I don't know. I don't always define precisely what I'm doing, but this curiosity and this will to be sort of persistent. And so the story of Selma to me became one of those ongoing stories that I thought I must watch, I must pay attention to long, long after it ceased to engage editors of newspapers or producers of television shows or newscasters.
Which typically doesn't happen in the news anymore.
No,
you get
it
a headline, it's gone.
So I kept going in the 1970s, 1980s. Occasionally, I'd go down to Selma. I knew people. I made, I associated with people when I first went as a reporter. I kept in touch, had their phone numbers. I knew where they lived. I'd make phone calls. Some of them died in the decades that followed, but I didn't, and a lot of people didn't. And there was one guy that I kept in touch with who was an attorney when Dr. King first made his presence in 1965 in Selma. And this attorney who was born in Selma is named J.L. Chestnut Jr. And I thought, here's a native son. This isn't some, outside agitator that came in, as Sheriff Clark would refer to them, or Governor Wallace. This was a guy that was born in the segregated South in this little plantation town called Selma, which during the Civil War had a great invasion of Northern armies. And during that period of Reconstruction was much oppressed as a little community that had been on the wrong side of the war. And here it is 100 years later. Now we're 1965 and it's still on the wrong side of the war. And what happens in 1975 and 85 and 95 to this town and the people around it? And how do they represent the nation? Is this the end of segregation? Is this going to be a period of egalitarianism? Are we going to have "We Shall Overcome" really realized? Yes or no? Well, the answer isn't either for a while. You have to watch it. So I watched this town as I also kept an eye on my own hometown and on my adopted city of New York City during this half century, almost. And in this book that is called A Writer's Life, and we've been more or less talking about, there are these stories, and one of the stories has to do with race. But it isn't the obvious man to write about, like Martin Luther King. I mean, leave that to Taylor Branch. He wrote
did a wonderful job
three
with
books.
It.
it's like Lyndon Johnson, leave it to Bob Carroll. He's five books.
Right.
They're historians, but I want to write history from a different perspective. So while I deal with King and deal with John Lewis and deal with the other significant marchers and many of the followers, including white followers and ministers from white ministers that were killed down there, as well as other victims, we all know that. But I wanted to tell that story like it's story, just a story, like an ongoing. Some of the great fiction writers deal with history better than historians.
Absolutely.
And let's take William Styron, The Confessions of Nat Turner. Or similarly, Sophie's Choice is great, but it's fiction. But it has a sense of truth about it that can be superimposed upon the historians who give rather a fractured or slanted or maybe limited view of history because it's from the vantage point of what is recorded. Because important people, you have records. There are records kept of presidents, of dictators, of movie stars. Records are kept. The people that I write about are reflective of history, but records are not kept. You have to do the legwork, and you have to do that in person. You don't Google this kind of stuff and get it. You don't get it through the machine.
It's also grounded in a place,
yeah.
And the place
it's
plays
a, stage,
a terrific
a theater,
role.
A center. It's a location. People who make movies are always looking for locations. I do the same thing for my books. I look for the location, and then I get to know the characters, and they become, with time, with research, they become transformed into, they're almost like fictional characters, but they're not. And I give the real names, the real verified history.
And the location itself becomes a character. One of the things that you do as you so elegantly weave this story around Gay Talise, that you may be the only person I've ever come across who recused himself from his own memoir. That takes some doing. but only for a moment. You actually make many of these locations into characters, whether you're talking about, and the one that particularly caught my attention was as you talk about the rural Italian Calabresi from which your father came, and comparing it specifically with Selma and the hill people that you find in common, and then going across the world and doing the same thing with China. And suddenly I have this sense of 50 years of your observation and the oneness of the stories that you are telling, as well as the singularity. That just comes
again,
with
the curiosity,
time, doesn't it?
You mentioned China. I didn't think about going to China. And even if I thought about it, I wouldn't have thought about writing about it from the view of trying to understand the Politburo or international relations with China based on the economy or
what really happened to Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, well, I wrote about that, incidentally. But because it was like Bloody Sunday to me, it was an event. It was a media event. Exaggerated, too, as was Bloody Sunday and Tiananmen's full of exaggeration of the American media. And I think I got that on the record in this book. But what prompted my curiosity was I was watching television. And it was in 1999. It was during the month of July. And there was a match from California's Rose Bowl involving American and Chinese women. And the game was not that particularly interesting to me. I don't like soccer. Understand it either, which is probably why I don't like it. But I did watch it because I was interested in why so many people were in the stands. There were 90,000 people cheering, reacting to what they were seeing, which is what I was seeing. I wasn't seeing anything, but I was interested in the crowd. And then the game ended, and no score, and the U.S. women and the Chinese women resorted to what's called penalty kicks, and five from the American team and five from the Chinese team alternated and did these kicks 12 yards from the spot where they put the ball on the grass, and they kick it, and the rival goalkeeper is either going to block it or not block it, and every one of those 10 people, with one exception, succeeded in kicking the ball into the net past the goalkeeper from the other team. The one who missed got my attention because of she has an experience unlike any Chinese person in the 5,000 years of civilized history, in front of so many people. And not only that, but the worldwide audience on television was watching
her. Hundreds of millions.
And I thought, what is it like when she goes back to China? I don't mean is she going to be thrown into Siberia. No. I mean, what is it like for a person who is unaccustomed to being the center of attention to get this attention in this rather disappointing way? And then if I could go and get to know her and hang around with her, because I do use this technique of hanging out with people. I did it with Frank Sinatra and everybody that I write about. It isn't talking to them so much, but hanging out and seeing what they see and trying to see through their vantage point, from their perspective, their experience, the larger context of their life, being Chinese in 1999, being Chinese in the 21st century as we get into enter it, 2000, 2001, 2002. And so I decided that I would just try to find her. I went to China, uninvited, with no connections. And I spent, first time I went to China was in, September of 99. I spent 5 months before I returned to New York. And I found her. But I found a larger story than her. And this is the way I work.
And do it elegantly. We'll be back in a moment with the great Gay Talese, who is a tailor of stories, as his father was a tailor of clothes. Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, are delighted to be with Gay Talese. We trust you'll be with us when we return.